From Redeemer Broadcasting, this is Holding All Things Together for the second weekend in July. I'm Dan Elmendorf.
And I'm Calvin Carter. The U.S. Department of Justice recently filed a complaint against all 15 federal district court judges in Maryland, including the clerk of the court. The lawsuit claims there was an egregious example of unlawful judicial overreach into the executive branch's ability to enforce and administer federal immigration law. The case involves the automatic issuance of an injunction the moment a habeas corpus petition is filed by an illegal alien with the court clerk. In other words, the injunction automatically kicks in without the judge being involved. It's like the judge can be just out playing golf, and the system acts almost robotic as the injunction launches all on its own. This automatic injunction would be issued in every such case upon filing. The issuance of an automatic injunction violates the four-factor test set forth by the Supreme Court that must be considered before a judge can issue a temporary restraining order or preliminary injunction. Here to discuss the details of this case is Hans von Spakovsky, Senior Legal Fellow in the Edwin Meese Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at Heritage.
The problem with this, and this is the basis of the lawsuit by Justice, is that you can't do that. The Supreme Court has set out very strict rules on the issuance of an injunction. There's a four-factor test. The plaintiffs can only get an injunction if they can show they're going to immediately be harmed, that the public interest, that there's just all these factors have to be met before an injunction can be issued. It can't be automatically issued.
Also ahead, Pastor Bill Shisko considers our obedience to God's revealed will as outlined in moral law, summarized in the Ten Commandments. Later in the program, writer Jerry Wiss continues looking at Jacob and Esau, so different, yet twins from the same parents. Despite his inherent weakness, Jacob is the one chosen for the covenant inheritance. As God works out his plan in history, we see Esau, the elder son, initially favored by his father, not receiving the blessing, though he assumed he would, despite his giving it up to Jacob. Finally, we'll take another look at this week in history. All this just ahead on Holding All Things Together.
So we're dealing with a form of sound teaching in the Westminster Shorter Catechism, particularly the mid part, questions 39 to 82. And you can get a copy of that catechism from Redeemer Broadcasting. We're dealing with obedience to God's revealed will, which means what he has told us, not what other individuals tell us apart from the word. It is summarized in the moral law, and the moral law is summarized in the Ten Commandments. And you can read those in both Exodus chapter 20 and Deuteronomy chapter 5. It'll be interesting for you to read those and see what the difference is in them. Exodus 20, Deuteronomy chapter 5. But note how they begin. The Ten Commandments begin not with commandments, but with, "I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage." Law begins with grace. It begins with deliverance. The Israelites were in Egypt, which represents the world. It represents bondage. They were delivered from Egypt into freedom. And remember how that came about. There was the Passover lamb by which, with the blood that had to be shed before they could be delivered. And it's the same thing for us. We're kind of still wandering the wilderness. We're not yet in the Canaan of glory itself, but we are delivered out of the spiritual land of Egypt and out of the house of bondage. And then that's question 43. Then question number 44 is, so what does that teach us? And the preface to the Ten Commandments teaches us, number one, that because God is the Lord, He is Yahweh, He is the covenant Lord, He makes promises, He has power to fulfill those promises. But the big thing with the covenant Lord, He's in a relationship with us. He gives Himself to us, and He is our God and Redeemer. He really does give Himself to us in the great Passover Lamb, the Lord Jesus Christ, to purchase us from the power of the devil himself, to purchase us for God, paying the purchase price of absolute obedience. And therefore, He is our Redeemer, and therefore we are bound to keep all His commandments. Well, we'll look at that more next week, but very simply it's this. You become God's child. He brings you into His house. He governs that house. He's gracious and He's good. He gives you commandments. Why would you not want to keep His commandments out of love and thanks for Him?
On the Zoom line with us today is Hans von Spakovsky of the Heritage Foundation. Hans, it's great to have you with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
There's a backstory here, and that is we tried to record this last week, and my recorder wasn't running, and you were kind enough to come back, so I want to thank you so very, very much. I really appreciate that.
Happy to talk to you.
You wrote an article on, I think it was July the 1st, titled Maryland Federal Judges All Get Hit with a DOJ Lawsuit for Violating the Law. Can you tell us what law was violated by these judges, Hans?
Sure. Well, first of all, this is an unprecedented law. I've never seen a lawsuit like this. But here's what's happening in the case. As you know, there have been a lot of lawsuits filed in Maryland because all the judges there, all the federal judges, you know, it's a very Democratic state, very blue state, very liberal federal judges. And so aliens who are trying to fight their removal from the country have been constantly going to Maryland to file lawsuits. Often these lawsuits are filed outside of regular working hours, you know, the evenings on weekends. And apparently the chief federal judge, there are 15 federal judges there, I guess he must not like his golf game getting interrupted because he issued a standing order. And the order says the moment any such lawsuit, any kind of petition like this is filed by an alien with the clerk of the federal court, there will be instantly issued an injunction.
Oh, so he could be out golfing and it would just be automatically issued?
Automatic injunction.
Oh, my goodness.
Telling the government they cannot take any further action, any further moves against this alien. And that injunction will extend for 2 days, two business days, after it's filed, unless it's extended by whatever judge it's assigned to. Mm. Now, the problem with this, and this is the basis of the lawsuit by Justice, is that you can't do that. The Supreme Court has set out very strict rules.
Right.
On the issuance of an injunction, there's a four-factor test. The plaintiffs can only get an injunction if they can show they're going to immediately be harmed, that the public interest, that there's just all these factors have to be met before an injunction can be issued. It can't be automatically issued. The other problem that Justice points out is that in a lot of these cases, these federal courts, they don't even have a jurisdiction over it. In other
words,
federal immigration law bars federal courts, for example, from looking at any case where the Department of Homeland Security is enforcing a deportation order that's been issued by an immigration judge. So it's just one thing after another like that. That means that this standing order, which applies, yeah, the chief judge issued it, but it applies to every single federal judge in the state, violates both federal immigrations, the federal immigration statutes, and the Supreme Court rule on injunctions. So that's what the lawsuit's all about.
Oh, man. What's the outlook? Will DOJ be successful in this, you think?
I think so. I don't really see how the judges there can fight this. What basis are they going to defend it on? By the way, interesting dilemma. Every single one of the Maryland judges is obviously recused from being able to hear the case because they have a very obvious conflict of interest. So
right.
This is going to be assigned to a federal judge from a different state.
Very interesting. Yes. We have a radio station in Southern Maryland. We serve St. Mary's County. So my heart is kind of tied to that part of Maryland, maybe a little bit more than usual. Today we're talking with Hans von Spakovsky. You know a lot about this stuff. You work for Heritage, but you didn't always work for them. What have you done in the past, Hans?
Well, I spent 2 years at the Federal Election Commission, which is the federal agency that enforces the laws on the raising and spending for federal money. But before that, I spent 4 years at the U.S. Department of Justice, which, given my experience there, I often refer to as the heart of darkness in D.C. because of the, frankly, shenanigans, unethical conduct, and other things that I saw there coming out of the career staff.
You saw it. That's so troublesome, really.
Well, it is, and it should be, and it should scare people. You know, the Washington Post and others recently have been running all these sympathetic articles for all these career lawyers who have left, and I actually know some of the ones who have left, and all I can say is I'm glad they're leaving because they're actually trying to clean up the department.
That's good. Excellent. Going forward, if you could advise, maybe step back in your old role, but advise this administration, how can we get through this mess that we find ourselves in that was really left for us by the Biden administration?
Well, I'll tell you, they are doing the right thing, which is I have never seen the Justice Department in all my years put up as fierce a fight as they are putting up.
Good.
I know it doesn't seem like it for folks who are reading the news,
no.
But the Justice Department, the Trump administration, in the last 2 months have been relatively successful. Every time they've gotten a bad decision from a federal district court judge, those are the trial level judges, you know, they've been filing appeals on an emergency basis with the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court often, over the objections of the three liberals on the court,
sure,
has actually been issuing stays of these lower court opinions, especially suspends their effectiveness in many of these cases, including, by the way, in many of these immigration cases. So they're putting up the kind of fierce fight that you need to do, and they're not letting this keep them from taking the actions needed to try to resolve and remedy this illegal immigration problem.
Yeah. Well, if you don't mind, summarize it one more time for listeners like me who are a little bit thick right on legal matters. What was this all about, and what do you think the outcome will be?
I think the Trump administration is going to win. And what this was about was the fact that the chief judge of the Maryland Federal District Court said to the clerk of the court, you will automatically issue an injunction before we've even heard any details, any evidence in a case filed by an alien who's trying to fight their deportation or removal from the U.S. That's what this is about.
Unbelievable. I keep shaking my head when I hear that.
Right.
It's like there's a robot that kicks in and says, okay, injunction granted.
Yeah, well, that's in essence what they were doing.
Unbelievable. I have some concerns about AI, too. I know that's not the subject of our discussion today, but, you know, how far are we going to let it go? And, you know, are there any boundaries? And we got to be careful. Yeah,
although, listen, on that topic, Dad, the Georgia courts just fined and imposed a penalty on a lawyer down there who used AI to compose a brief, and it had so many mistakes in it that they imposed a fine on him.
That's very funny. If someone wants to read more of your excellent writings, Hans von Spakovsky, where can they go?
They can go to heritage.org, heritage.org. And by the way, I just published a paper there on what the due process rights of aliens are and are not.
Oh, wow. That's big. You want to give us one of the highlights really quick?
Well, those who think that illegal aliens enjoy all the same constitutional rights as all of us citizens are just completely and totally wrong. And that's according to federal immigration law and multiple Supreme Court precedents.
Well, that's very helpful. Maybe we should talk about that sometime in the future.
Sure.
Hans von Spakovsky, our friend, may God bless your work and give you success. Thank you for joining us today.
Sure, thanks for having me.
Today, Jerry Wiss continues looking at Jacob and Esau. So different, yet twins from the same parents. Despite his inherent weakness, Jacob is the one chosen for the covenant inheritance. Esau sells his birthright for some stew. His action confirms God's plan from the beginning. Esau despises his birthright. His appetites came first. As God works out his plan in history, we see Esau, the elder son initially favored by his father, not receiving the blessing, though he assumed he would, despite his giving it up to Jacob. God chose Jacob to inherit the covenant blessing. This shows us how what we expect may not be part of God's sovereign plan, to which we can only acquiesce and trust God. Jerry is a frequent contributor to Holding All Things Together and is a writer for Christian Renewal magazine.
We are looking at Jacob and Esau, twin brothers, and the sons of Isaac and Rebekah in the covenant household. Could any two brothers be more different? Esau is gregarious, manly, able, and the presumed heir of Isaac's household. Jacob is quieter, contemplative, calculating, and the apparent second fiddle. Perhaps even something of a mama's boy. The two represent two nations, God tells Rebekah, after she beseeches the Lord, asking what is happening in her while pregnant. The two struggled within her, we are told in Genesis 26:22, a precursor to their struggle with each other in life. A modern retelling of this biblical narrative is in R.C. Sproul's novel, Johnny Come Home, a Jacob and Esau story, not about two brothers, but two good friends who take different paths in life. It's a Jacob and Esau tale transplanted into modern times, which illustrates and illumines the working out of God's providence in a contemporary setting. Jacob, not Esau, is the heir apparent of the covenant. This, I trust, is no spoiler to those who know the Bible. It's also not a surprise, since, as we had seen last time, the Lord told Rebekah that the older will serve the younger. The younger, Jacob, is the second born of the twins, coming into this world while holding on to the firstborn Esau's heel. From the very beginning, he shows himself to be along for the ride. This is how he will spend much of his life, along for the ride, until the Lord openly and clearly puts him in covenant position. The passage where Esau sells his birthright to Jacob, among the best-known passages in Scripture, is in Genesis 25, verses 29 to 34. You know the story. Esau comes in from the field where he'd been hunting, exhausted, hungry, and impatient. Jacob, meanwhile, staying close to home, is making a stew. Give me some, Esau says. I'm exhausted. Sure, Jacob responds, for your birthright, now. Esau says, essentially, whatever. His appetites and physical needs are greater to him than his birthright. And so when told to swear that it's now Jacob's, in exchange for the stew, in other words, to take an oath to that effect, Esau says, sure, why not? He laps up the stew and drinks, then rises and goes on his way. We are told as though nothing of much consequence had occurred. Scripture then tells us that by doing this, Esau despised his birthright. What was the birthright? Well, certainly it was the inheritance of all that was Isaac's upon the patriarch's death, but it's something much more than that, too. The birthright, so-called, is the right to inherit the covenant promise, which means the land of Canaan that God had promised to Abraham, though still far off in Isaac's day, but even more the covenant promise of grace, that God would be the inheritor's God, and that he and his would be God's people. Was Esau aware of this? Well, perhaps partially so. He knew the birthright entitled him to Isaac's inheritance, but he made light of it, putting his appetites first, no doubt thinking it a small thing. And when the time would come for the inheritance to be passed on at Isaac's demise, Esau, who was the apple of Isaac's eye, no doubt would retain his confidence. What's an oath? When the last word would be the patriarch's, who was firmly in Esau's corner, not in Jacob's. We will see this in Genesis 27, where Esau is fully on board in preparation for receiving Isaac's inheritance and blessing, regardless of the oath that he had taken with Jacob. What about Jacob? Did he know what the birthright entailed? It's unclear at this point to what extent Jacob understood the breadth and depth of the covenant promise. What is sure is that he knew the birthright entitled its holder to the inheritance. He had his brother's oath that it was now his, even though there are no witnesses. Apparently, Jacob was willing to work out the details of how the inheritance would come to him later.
Time once again for This Week in History. July 14th, 1789. The fall of the Bastille marks the beginning of the French Revolution. July 16th, 1911. Ginger Rogers, actress and dancer, is born. Many said she was a better dancer than Fred Astaire, her film partner, because everything he did, she did backwards and in heels. July 16, 1969, the Apollo 11 lunar landing mission began with a liftoff from Kennedy Space Center at 9:37 a.m. July 18, 1792. While waiting for word on a commission as the United States consul to Algiers, Revolutionary War hero John Paul Jones dies in his Paris flat at the age of 55. Jones led the USS Bonhomme Richard in one of the nation's fiercest naval battles when he engaged and defeated the 50-gun British warship, the HMS Serapis, in 1779. Famously, as his ship was taking on water, Jones replied to the British captain's call for surrender, "I have not yet begun to fight." Jones is considered the father of the U.S. Navy, and his crypt lies beneath the U.S. Naval Academy Chapel, where a Marine guard stands watch whenever the crypt is open to visitors. And July 19th, 1799. A basalt stone, inscribed with Greek, Egyptian hieroglyphics, and Egyptian demotic writing, is found by a French soldier taking part in Napoleon Bonaparte's Egyptian campaign. One inscription in Greek announces that the three sets of inscriptions on the stone are identical and written by priests to honor Egyptian king Ptolemy V in the 2nd century BC. It allows for the reading of hieroglyphics for the first time in almost 2,000 years. The stone is ultimately housed in the British Museum and named after the village where it was found, Rosetta. That was This Week in History. Events as man recorded them, as God ordained them.
That's our program for this week. Thanks for joining us. Holding All Things Together is a production of Redeemer Broadcasting, and the views expressed are those of the participants. If you'd like to contact us for any reason, we would love to hear from you. Our email address is ministry@redeemerbroadcasting.org. For Holding All Things Together, I'm Dan Elmendorf.
And I'm Cal Carter.
God willing, see you next week.